parents make?
I would encourage you, if you've got a Bible in front of you, to flick it open to Joshua chapter 3, follow along as we go. The reading started from verse 14, so that's where I woke up from. So, as Lauren has mentioned a few times this morning, our theme is remembering what God has done. I wonder how you are at remembering what God has done. How are you at sharing stories of where you've seen God at work in your life? How are you at bringing that up in everyday conversation? If I was to ask us as a room to share the stories that God has done, I'm sure some of us might have loads of encouraging stories where we can say, oh, this is where I've seen God really at work over the last year, and this has been really encouraging, and I've been blown away by his faithfulness. There might also be some of us that say, look, if I'm honest, I look at people who seem to always be at the heart of the action, and I never really seem to have a story. I never really seem to get to be part of the stories of what God has done. And so it's quite tricky to remember what God has done because I never see it. Others of us might be here and wouldn't be used to church or call ourselves Christians or anything like that. And you might think, I've never even thought about the fact that you'd remember anything God has done. What does that even mean? And so to kind of help us think about our theme of remembering what God has done, what I'd like us to do through this passage is take a little bit of a step back, as well as saying, how do we remember what God has done, take a kind of wider step and say, well, what is it like to be part of what God is doing? How can we live lives where we are so kind of in tune with what God might be calling us to that we get to see God doing things and then therefore have even more to remember and even more to thank God for and even more to share with each other? So that's what I want to pull out of this passage is what would it look like for us as a church in Nephi, or for you, wherever you live and spend your week normally, what would it be like for us as a group of people to be people that are so in sync with what God is doing and stepping out into what God is asking us to do, that then we just naturally end up remembering what he's done? So this passage, a little bit of context. You've had the Israelites, they've been wandering around for 40 years with the promise of the promised land. And at this stage in the passage, we're just kind of almost about there. So Moses was leading the Israelites, and then Joshua has just taken over leading the Israelites. And one of the hurdles in the way of getting to the promised land is the River Jordan. And so the River Jordan, I did a little bit of research. It was probably about 100 feet wide normally, but at this point it was a bit wider because it was in harvest. So it was probably about the same width as the Spey down at Broom Hill. That's not what it says in my study Bible, but that's what measuring can give me the most accurate estimation. And so Joshua needs to lead his people across the Jordan. And what God says to him is, okay, we'll send the Ark of the Covenant down with the priests, and then when they get there, then you'll be able to cross the river. So he sends the Ark of the Covenant down with the priests, and then as soon as the priests get their feet right to the edge of the water, then suddenly the water starts trickling, and they have dry land to be able to pass over. Now, depending on who you read and what study notes you find, there could have been anything from about 40,000 Israelites up to hundreds of thousands. So you're talking about a pretty big group of people. This isn't just being on a family walk and having to pull up your trousers and walk across a wee burn. This is a pretty serious thing. And so, of course, this amazing miracle happens and God dries up the river and they're able to cross over, and then they get to the other end and God says, well, before you go anywhere, I want you to get these stones and I want you to gather them up and I want you to have them as a way of remembering what I've done. So from the passage, I'd like to suggest three kind of rhythms for us to get involved with what God is doing. First rhythm is to step out. The second is to stand firm. And then the third is to stop. So it's to step out, it's to stand firm, and it is to stop. What would it be like if this week you got just that little bit better at standing out, at stepping out, at standing firm, and at stopping? So first of all, step out. So verse 14. When the people broke camp to cross the Jordan, the priests carrying the Ark of the Covenant went ahead of them. Now, the Jordan is in flood all during harvest. Yet as soon as the priests who carried the Ark reached the Jordan and their feet touched the water's edge, the water from upstream stopped flowing. It piled up in a heap a great distance away at a town in Adam in the vicinity of Zarethan, where the water flowing down to the Sea of the Arabah, the Salt Sea, was completely cut off. So the people crossed over opposite Jericho. Now, two things are pretty pertinent here I want to draw your attention to. First of all is this, the Jordan is in flood all during harvest. So as if it's bad enough having to cross this river, it is the worst time of year to be doing it. Humanly speaking, something that was quite challenging now seems even more impossible. We've all seen what the Spey is like or what other rivers are like when it's in spate in the springtime. It is so powerful, it is kind of completely overwhelming, and you think, I would not want to be wading across that. But then the second thing to draw your attention to is this. Just at the end of verse 16, the people crossed over opposite Jericho. Jericho was bad news. That is where the enemies were. The Israelites were incredibly vulnerable because they were just across from Jericho. So humanly speaking, this was a stupid idea. First of all, because the river was in spate. Secondly, because their enemies were just across on the other side of the river from them. And yet God says, I want you to walk down to the river and I'd like you to step out with the Ark of the Covenant and then I'll look after you. So, I don't know about you, but if I was Joshua, I would probably enter a bit of a negotiation at this point. And I would say, hang on, I'm quite up for the idea of you performing a miracle. I'm up for that. I'm up for crossing this river and I'm up for getting to the promised land. Two things though. First of all, why don't you just make the water go down a little bit before we go close to the river? And secondly, could we just move away from Jericho a little bit? But you don't have this negotiation. You just have these priests for the Ark of the Covenant stepping out. Humanly speaking, it seemed completely stupid and ridiculous. And yet, what the priests did was they stepped out. They led the Israelites out. They stepped out in faith. Where would we stop ourselves from stepping out simply because, humanly speaking, it seems completely ridiculous and completely impossible? Who are you limiting having that conversation at work with because you think, humanly speaking, they're just not ready to hear about my faith yet? Or what's God calling you to do that you think, no, it just seems a wee bit ridiculous, so just wait to see if the landscape changes a bit before I step out in faith with this? Or even in yourself, where have you stopped God's grace acting in your own heart because you think, humanly speaking, I'm just too broken, I'm just too messed up. God couldn't work here. The environment was completely ridiculous, humanly speaking, for the Israelites to cross over the Jordan, and yet God says, no, step out. What would it look like if we were people who stepped out even when it seemed humanly impossible and even stupid and ridiculous and irresponsible? But God is a God who seems to kind of work in the humanly ridiculous. It was humanly ridiculous that a little boy called David would go and fight Goliath, and yet he stepped out in faith. It was humanly ridiculous that Abraham and Sarah would have kids given how old they were, and yet he stepped out. It was humanly ridiculous that Ananias would go to a terrorist called Saul and say, I think I'm supposed to pray for you just now, and yet he stepped out and he became Paul. It was humanly ridiculous that the cross would not be a stoppage to Jesus being raised from the dead, and yet we see God performing there. And so where have you written off God doing something in your life because it just seems so humanly impossible for God might actually be calling you to just step out? Where it's about saying, we'll get your feet wet first and then we'll see what happens to the river. Now, of course, this comes with a little bit of a disclaimer. I'm not just saying that willy-nilly a thought pops into your head and you say, great, I'm just going to dive in head first. But I am saying maybe the thing that is holding you back is actually your fear, and maybe God might actually be just saying, go on, test it. And so talk to people. Talk to people that are part of this church. Talk to mentors. Read the Bible. Pray about it. Get in community with other Christians and say, I think this is where God's calling me to step out. And to be honest, I'm terrified. And it, humanly speaking, it feels ridiculous. But can I just bounce this past you? Imagine if this church was a place where that was the kind of conversation that was going on in coffee. where it was saying, I want to step out and I'm terrified. Can I just talk through this with you? But that is the first step from pulling out of this passage to actually seeing God doing amazing things, is step out, get your feet wet. So step out. Secondly, stand firm. So verse 17. The priests who carried the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord stood firm on dry ground in the middle of the Jordan, while all Israel passed by until the whole nation had completed the crossing on dry ground. So this story would be amazing anyway, even if it had read something like, the priests with the Ark of the Covenant stepped into the water stopped flowing, and then they led the way over to the other side of the Jordan, and everyone followed. And yet, there's this funny little verse in the middle where it says, the Ark of the Covenant, which represented God's presence with them and was God with them, stops in the middle of the dry ground and it stands firm, and then everyone passes by it. Why would that be? If you think about for each one of the Israelites, their actual experience of walking through the Jordan, each one of the Israelites would have ended up passing by the Ark of the Covenant. Each one of the Israelites would have had the experience of crossing over the Jordan, probably thinking, oh my goodness, this is the most amazing thing I've ever seen, this is ridiculous, and then having a reminder of, oh, and God's right there. God's with me in the heart of this miracle. I pass by the presence of God and I remember that this miracle is because this is who I'm with and this is who I worship. I wonder maybe if God hadn't been there, if the Ark of the Covenant hadn't stayed in that firm ground, maybe two things might have happened. Maybe number one, they might have been crossing the Jordan with the fear of, oh, but what happens if the Jordan starts flowing again? But then they look at the Ark of the Covenant and they say, of course it's not, I'm with God. Or maybe secondly, they might have the risk of falling into thinking, this is something that I've done. Hey, isn't it great being an Israelite? Because these are the kind of things that just happen to us all the time because we're the Israelites. And then, you know, have a look at the Ark of the Covenant and remember, oh, actually, it's nothing to do with me. It's everything to do with who we have with us. It's everything to do with the God that we worship. Once we've stepped out in faith, it is also about saying, well, stand firm and remember who you're with. One of the incredible things about God is God is probably a lot more interested in the relationship he has with you than he is in the miracles he's going to perform for you. Ephesians says that since before the creation of the world, he calls us into adoption. God is a God of relationship. He is more interested in a relationship with you than he is in performing kind of fancy miracles. And the Israelites would have been reminded of that. In the middle of the miracle, they have God right with them, in relationship with them. He's right there beside them. And so when we are stepping out, when we feel like we're doing something that's part of God's work, what's it like to just stand firm and say, I remember who I'm with? I know even for me, when I am preparing preaches, and I'm not saying my preaching is a miracle, but Rachel would probably say it's a miracle if it's over within 20 minutes. But when I'm preparing my preaches, one of the best pieces of advice I ever got from a church leader was to say, be careful when you're doing God's work and you're praying and you're trying to say, God, what are you doing? What message do you want to bring? How do you want me to communicate this? The best piece of advice I got was, don't fall into a professional relationship with God, where you just become someone that just kind of does the work of God and misses out on the heart of the relationship. When we want to remember what God is doing and we want to be part of what God is doing, it is not for the sake of seeing God just do amazing things. That isn't the end goal for God. The relationship with us is the end goal. God would perform miracles, God would give us amazing signs and wonders so that we might be brought closer to him. And standing firm in the heart of the miracle is to say, I stand firm beside God. The Ark of the Covenant is there on the firm ground, and when I am with him, I know that this miracle is not about me. I know that it's entirely about him, and I know that I get to keep in a relationship with him. Maybe also shown when Peter was walking on water. Peter steps out of the boat, this amazing miracle, and as soon as he takes his eyes off of Jesus, he gets scared and starts sinking, and it's not until he turns right around to Jesus again that everything's okay. When we step out, then we also need to stand firm and say, I still stand firm in relationship with God. I stand firm knowing that He's got me, and I know that He is the miracle worker who's actually interested in a relationship with me, probably more than He's interested in the miracle at this point. So we step out, we stand firm, and then thirdly, we stop. So chapter 4, verse 1, right the way through to verse 10. When the whole nation had finished crossing the Jordan, the Lord said to Joshua, "Choose 12 men from among the people, one from each tribe, and tell them to take up 12 stones from the middle of the Jordan, from right where the priest stood, and to carry them over with you, and put them down at the place where you stay tonight." So Joshua called together the 12 men he had appointed from the Israelites, one from each tribe, and he said to them, "Go over before the ark of the Lord your God into the middle of the Jordan. Each of you is to take up a stone on his shoulder according to the number of the tribes of the Israelites, to serve as a sign among you. In the future, when your children ask you, 'What do these stones mean?' tell them that the flow of the Jordan was cut off before the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord. When it crossed the Jordan, the waters of the Jordan were cut off. These stones are to be a memorial to the people of Israel forever." So the Israelites did as Joshua commanded them. They took 12 stones from the middle of the Jordan, according to the number of the tribes of the Israelites, as the Lord had told Joshua, and they carried them over with them to their camp, where they put them down. Joshua set up 12 stones that had been in the middle of the Jordan at the spot where the priests who carried the Ark of the Covenant had stood, and they are there to this day. So if I was part of the Israelites, I would probably want to cross over the Jordan and then get going. I'd probably want to think, okay, we've got Jericho to worry about, and we're on this journey towards the promised land. But God says, no, I want you to stop. I want you to come back, and I want you to get these stones, and I want you to build this memorial. A little bit of neuroscience for you here. Yeah. Now, I'm no neuroscientist, so excuse the layman's way of explaining this, but do you know that when you have a bad thing happen to you, the neural pathways are laid down like Velcro at that point? Like, they instantly stick to your brain and you remember the bad thing. But when something good happens to you, in order to make those memories stick, it's a bit more like, you know, the adhesive where you need to hold it together for a while before it actually fully sticks. That's what happens neurologically when it comes to forming good memories and bad memories. So that's why if you get 10 emails in your inbox tomorrow morning and 9 of them are great encouragements and the 10th one is one that's a critical piece of feedback, you're going to dwell on that one because it sticks instantly. That's why at the end of the service, if 20 people come up to me and say, "James, that was the most amazing preach I've ever heard in my life. My whole life has been transformed. Thank you for being God's servant." And one person comes up to me and says, "I think you're a heathen and everything you said was ridiculous." That one's probably going to stick with me. As is the case, God, obviously in his infinite wisdom and his creatorship, I think probably knew fine well what he was up to here. I wonder if the Israelites had just gone on, then they might have had some way of kind of forgetting about what God had done by separating the Jordan. But actually what God says is, no, I want you to slow down for a minute, and I want you to be in this memory of this great thing that I have done. I want you to actually take the time to remember. I want you to go back to the place where the miracle happened, and I want you to do something that's going to stop you in your tracks, because I know you want to go on, and I want you to do something that is going to force you to remember. But even more than that, it's going to be a conversation starter for other people, for your children. Your children are going to look and say, "What is this thing?" And then you have an opportunity to share something amazing that I've done. It's all very well stepping out. That's incredible. It's also incredible standing firm and being with God. But actually what this passage would suggest to us, we also need to take the time to just stop and say, let's just remember what God is doing right now and what God has done. How are your patterns of stopping and remembering what God has done? Rather than just maybe letting the bad things that are happening environmentally and the reasons why God might perform miracles stick to you like Velcro, rather than taking the time to say, well, what are the good things that God has done? How can we celebrate what God's done in the life of Nethi over the last year? How can we celebrate what God's done in our businesses and our schools and our universities over the last year? Or right now, what God is doing? Beryl, I'm sure, won't mind me sharing. Beryl and I had an amazing phone call this week where it was when I was asking about encouragements for what had happened in the year. And one of the things Beryl said to me was how encouraging she had found it to take the time to look over her diary over the last year and be really encouraged with what she'd seen God do. And I just thought that was amazing, the idea of, oh, how do I just stop and just take stock of the year? This time of year is good for doing that kind of thing, but what does it look like to build it as a rhythm, as a habit, where we stop and we say, I remember what God has done in my life. And so, I think you probably get what I'm trying to get at here. What's it like to stop and remember? So what I want to give us the chance to do just now is we'll just have a few moments of quiet and we'll just have the chance to remember. If you think, I don't know what stories I have of what God has done, or if you wouldn't have a relationship with God where that would be the kind of language that you use, then just take the opportunity to think, what am I thankful for at the moment? Just stop and say, what's good in my life? So we're going to take a few moments just to be quiet and to just trust that God, who is here with us and who wants us to be in relationship with him, might just pop ideas into your mind that might just be the thing he wants you to remember. And then it's about asking, how do we perform rhythms in our life that allow us to step out even when it seems impossible, to stand firm and remember that we have a relationship with God, who is the miracle worker, who wants to be with us, and to stop. So let's just take a few moments just now to stop and remember in our hearts and minds what God has done. So I'll pray just for a wee second to frame that. But Lord God, thank you so much that you're a God who loves us, cares for us, wants to be in relationship with us, and performs things that seem seemingly impossible. And so God, thank you that you're here right now. Thank you that you're alive in the room. And I pray, God, that just you would drop memories and encouragements into our minds just now. Trust that you're the God of our minds as much as you're the God of our circumstance. So over the next few moments, just bring to mind memories of things that we can remember you've done. It's great, you can open your eyes and come back in. But the challenge for you is this, the things that popped into your head there that God might have wanted you to remember, share that with someone over the next couple of days. Do the equivalent of building rocks at coffee in a few minutes when we're next door. What would it be like to have conversations like that where you ask someone, was there something that popped into your mind? Let me tell you what came into my mind. For maybe as a church, we can get really good at stopping and saying, this is what I remember God has done. So, what does it look like to be part of what God is doing and remember? First of all, it's stepping out. It's getting your feet wet. It's saying, this might seem humanly impossible, but I know that I can step out in faith because I'm with God. And then as I step out, I stand firm. I say, I'm with God. He is with me. I know that I've got his presence with me. It's not about anything I'm doing, but it's about everything he's doing, and I'm in relationship with him. And then it's about stopping and saying, well, actually, how do I remember that? How do I tell people about that? So let me pray to close as the band come up and we'll close together. But Lord God, thank you so much for all that you've done in our lives. Thank you that you allow us to see you at work. And I pray that we might be people that step out together and encourage each other to step out, to stand firm, remembering who you are, and that we stop to remember what you've done. Thank you, Lord. Amen.